You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
You know what? More people agree with me on robot umps than I would have thought. A lot of people don't like them. But I don't think any of us have a good argument against them other than we don't like them.
Yeah.
But so what? That's my argument.
I saw a good one. It's like, Lou can't kick a robot ump.
True.
Or kick dirt on a robot. And I was like, no, but we'd all love to see a good office space when they take the robot out in the outfield with a couple bats.
Back up.
We're about to do that with a copier here.
Yes. Our printer in the sports pit, right?
Yeah.
We're going to take that thing out.
Yeah.
What do you want to use to bash that thing? Hands?
Fireworks.
Fireworks. Oh, you want to blow it up
from
the
inside
out.
We've got golf clubs here, don't we?
We do. Yeah, there used to be a putter around. My favorite in Office Space is when he's cocking back his arm.
To punch it, and they're trying to like grab him.
It's so good.
The slow motion of it is great, and he comes back, runs back.
It's so good. So good. Oh, man. That and them dancing in the next scene. So perfect. All right. Hey, good morning, everybody. It's the Mike Salk Show here on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com as well. Monday night, Geno Smith is going to be in there for a second start. I hope he can do better than last week. I hope he can. He's shown that on a few drives, he can be a pretty good quarterback. He has, right? You got the 98-yard drive when he first took over or late in the game against the Rams. And then certainly, he doesn't get any credit for what happened on the 9 out of 10 rushing play touchdown drive. But I thought he looked pretty good on the next drive when he needed to run play action. And I thought he looked pretty good on the game-tying drive at the end of regulation. So there were a couple of decent drives. There's like been four drives maybe since he took over where Geno Smith has looked like a competent to good quarterback. Good for that.
I felt really, really encouraged watching Case Keenum last night. It can happen.
It can happen. The problems for him have come when he turns it over, when he gets desperate, or if he's asked to do too much. Those have really been, to me, the three things that Geno hasn't been able to do. And so if you know that, then that's a helpful start. If you know what you can do and what you can't do, that's a good start, right? They've learned, hopefully, over the course of these last game and a half, what Geno can do and what he can't. So they're going to have to run the ball. They're going to have to put them in positions to succeed. And if they're able to do that, can they beat the Saints? Sure, they can. I mean, I don't know if I'd go down a, Snoqualmie and bet the money on it right now. But, like, can they? Yeah, of course they can. I also think Pete is going to be all over Geno when it comes to securing the ball. Two games, two key turnovers. One interception at the end of the game on Thursday night, and then, of course, the fumble at the end in overtime on Sunday night. And Pete, I mean, he was talking about the fumble. Did you hear Pete just like the way he jumped all in on that?
Pete Carroll knows exactly.
I'm sorry, this is Matt talking about it. Hold on. This was Pete on Geno.
He handled everything really well and throughout the whole thing, and he was so upset that it comes down and he loses the football right at the end there, And really, when you look right at it, Geno had terrible ball security as he ducked up in there. I mean, we don't let anybody run with the football like that, and he'll see it. You know, he had the ball like he's carrying, a loaf of bread, like they say.
And so when Pete said that to me Monday morning, I was definitely like, that stood out to me, right? Pete doesn't generally say anything is terrible. So when he says something is terrible, that stands out. But when we talked to Hasselbeck a couple days later, and Matt obviously played a year for Pete, it was interesting. Matt hadn't heard that cut from Pete. He had not heard Pete say that about Geno. But when Matt said this, I definitely connected the two.
Pete Carroll knows exactly what he wants to be. He understands what his formula is, and it's not showing up on the field. You know, I've talked about it basically every week, just about his formula is, hey, it's all about the ball. That's ball security, and that's taking the ball away. And, I think I counted four fumbles. We didn't lose them all, but, like, that's a problem. Even just like, the look of ball security. Like, I look at some plays, and, whether that's there's a fumble or not, like, I know when I played for Pete, it didn't matter if it was a fumble or not. He cared about how you were carrying the ball because he knew, like, what was likely to happen.
So if he cares about not just how you're, what the result is, but what the process is, how do you think he felt about Geno on that play?
Pretty disappointed.
I would hope so. And I would certainly think so. I mean, he used the word terrible in order to describe it. So they know what he can and can't do. Obviously, that doesn't sit well with Pete. So how do you put him in a good position to succeed? It's also worth noting that the last time the Seahawks played the Saints, they lost, but Drew Brees was not playing. The Saints beat them with Teddy Bridgewater. Now, did Teddy Bridgewater have a good day? No.
No.
He threw for 177 yards, but 2 touchdowns, no picks.
And did we lose a turnover battle?
By a lot, yes. It was not a pretty day. There were a whole bunch of turnovers in that game. Kamara just went nuts catching the ball. He had 9 catches for 92 yards or something. Seahawks made a whole bunch of mistakes in the game. I don't remember the number of turnovers they had, but it was a few. They gave the game to the Saints.
And they gave up a punt return for a touchdown. They went for it on 4th down twice, didn't get it.
Yeah.
Chris Carson fumbled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't do all those things. Right?
Bad. I remember that. It was a really rainy day, too. I remember this game, right?
I remember because I was at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas watching that game. You know what else happened that very same day? Jamal Adams had a pick 6 against Tom Brady.
His one and only?
His one and only.
I didn't even know he had one.
It was the only. I think it was the only 7 points the Jets scored in like a 49-7 loss.
And you were like, let's go get that guy. That would have changed everything.
I might have had a couple bucks on the Jets, and they covered because of that play. It was like the most amazing. I don't think it was against Brady. I think they brought in the backup. I'm pretty sure that Brady was dominating. The Patriots brought in the backup.
Hoyer or something?
It might have been Hoyer. Might have been somebody else. I don't know. And he threw a pick 6 to Jamal Adams. And Belichick was like, get him back out there. And threw Brady back in the game.
I do remember that.
Yeah. And so I had taken the Jets as part of something. So it had kind of worked out for me that day. It was really funny. So there are ways to win this game. There really are. You just need to know Geno's strengths and weaknesses and have him play the kind of game that Teddy Bridgewater played that day. Russell threw for 406 yards that day against New Orleans. Lost the game. Teddy threw for 177, but no interceptions. Did what he needed to do. Distributed the ball. Let Alvin Kamara, let his playmakers do their thing. And that's what you got to do this week. Right? Let your playmakers do their thing. You know who I'm talking about? Rashad Penny. Just let Rashad do his thing. You saw it last night. Speaking of backup quarterbacks, I know you want to talk about it, Justin. You were talking about how Cleveland came away with a win with Case Keenum. How did they do it? Did Case Keenum go crazy and throw for a gazillion yards?
Another backup running back.
To Ernest Johnson.
A guy that was 146 yards.
Sending direct messages to every AAF team asking for a chance a couple years ago.
There you go.
Man.
So you're telling me that if De'Ernest Johnson can have 146 yards in a game, that you can't bring yourself to believe in my guy, Rashad Penny, with his 100 yards that you know are coming this week?
The decimated Broncos defense right now is a bit different than the Saints.
Maura, do not start bringing context into this. That is not important.
I totally agree with you that what it's going to take to win is the run game heavily supporting Geno.
There we go. That's what we need. The run game heavily supporting Geno. I think they can do that. So I'm very hopeful. I don't know that they're going to win this game, but I am hopeful that at the very least they've got, you know, they understand now what they can and can't
okay,
do.
Okay, just be ready then, because later we're going to ask you the Seahawks win if, and I need to have that. Oh, I need to have that ready
Rashad
to go.
We're not going
to
do that Monday.
You don't even need to wait. I'll just say it right now. Rashad Penny, 100 yards. Okay, if he has 100 yards, they win.
We'll wait till Monday then.
Which means I guess they're going to win because I'm already telling you to bank on it. He's got 100 yards. Put it on the board.
Maybe a pick 6 too.
All right. Hey, I was listening to Jake and Stacey yesterday, and interesting thought here. This is on the other side of the ball, on the defensive side of the ball. Robert Sala used to be what? He was with the Niners, their defensive coordinator. He had been here, then he was with the Niners, the defensive coordinator, and now he's a head coach of the Jets. And he had a lot to say about the Seahawks defense and sort of the evolution of it and what it's been like to run that thing. Hold on, I have it here. Where'd it go? Here we go. It's a really long quote, so I won't read you the whole thing, but he was asked about sort of the evolution of that 3-deep zone and everything the Seahawks do, and he talks about how back in the day they reinvented the wheel with 3-deep and nobody had ever seen it before, and it was really effective, and he talks about teams starting to figure it out over time. He said, I'll give Kyle Shanahan credit. He was with Dan Quinn in Atlanta, and he just started testing all this stuff against the scheme because Dan took it to Atlanta, and then he exposed it to Seattle, and then from there, the floodgates open. And so now he says teams understand exactly how to attack it, but at the same time, it's on the defense to make sure you're putting enough wrinkles in so teams can't just throw haymakers at you every single play. So, for example, he says Josh McDaniels is one of the best coordinators in all of football as it pertains to finding your run-pass weakness, finding the defender who's got the hardest job with regard to a run-pass conflict and attacking the daylights out of him. Doesn't that sound like what we've seen this year? right? Finding Bobby Wagner, Jamal Adams, or Brooks, Jordan Brooks, and attacking him because he's in that run-pass dilemma. So as a D coordinator, Salah says, you've just got to do a really good job of finding ways to move the issue from player to player so Josh and a good offensive coordinator doesn't catch the defense. I think that's pretty interesting.
Move the issue from player to player. Does that mean move the wrinkle?
Yes. Essentially saying there's always going to be somebody in this scheme that's in a run-pass dilemma. So who is it? Maybe on this play it's Bobby. On the next play it's Jordan Brooks. On the play after that it's Jamal Adams. Then it's Quandre Diggs. Then it's Daryl Taylor. Like, how do you switch up who is in the dilemma? That's how I read it anyway. In order to make sure that while the offense knows they're trying to put someone in a dilemma, they don't necessarily know who that's going to be. So here's Jake talking about that yesterday.
It's the same defense. Now,
are you positive?
1,000%. 1,000%. I know there's only 100%, but I'm telling you 1,000% definitively, they are running the same scheme. And look, Robert Saleh, Gus Bradley, Dan Quinn, any of those disciples from that coaching tree, they run the same cover three scheme. But what Robert Saleh is talking about is that there's variations within that scheme that you can do on a play-to-play basis. There's also different coverages that you can add to it.
So if I understand Jake correctly, essentially he's suggesting that they need to be changing up who is in the conflict point more. And I guess that would fall on Ken Norton. Here's a little bit more from Jake.
There's different ways that you can constantly try to change the picture, to to not allow an offensive coordinator like Josh McDaniels that he just said, or a guy like Kyle Shanahan or anybody else in the league, to know exactly what coverage you're running. And knowing that you're calling plays because you know you're going to get one high coverage, you're going to get cover three for a big high percentage of the time, and you know exactly who to exploit and who to attack. And it really brings me to the Rams game where Sean McVay ran the same play over and over again, and the Seahawks kept calling the same defense, cover three defense, over and over and over again, and it didn't work out for them because the Rams knew the answers and knew exactly who they wanted to exploit, and they went and attacked it.
Well, I think some of that is accurate, obviously. I think Pete would disagree with some of that as well, though. So, I understand Jake and what he's saying, and I think there's probably a lot in there about trying to vary up the scheme and provide at least some level of confusion or hiding what you're doing so that the offense can't just pick it apart. But I think what Pete would tell you, and in fact, it's what he did tell us on Monday morning, is that he believes it was more an issue in the way they were playing it. So he believes it was more an issue with the way that same defender who's in the, what did he call it? The decision point, the dilemma, the run pass dilemma. He didn't like the way they were playing it. And so when we asked Pete about it Monday, he said they cleaned it up. So I think Pete would see this differently. I don't think Pete would tell you it was just a play calling thing, or maybe he thinks they changed up the plays. But Pete feels as if against Pittsburgh, they had worked on it enough, they've cleaned up that issue, and he doesn't believe it will continue to be one. So I don't know if that's because they're varying it more. I don't know if it's because they worked with Bobby or Jordan or Jamal or Quandre or whomever it is. He believes that they've cleaned that up and it shouldn't be a problem. Now, where I think is still a problem is the amount of time they're giving the opposing quarterback to try to figure it out. I don't care how much you clean up your run-pass dilemma. If you have 30 seconds back there, eventually somebody's getting open.
No, Big Ben gets rid of the ball too quick.
I know that. I know that's an issue. And if I... I know you can't possibly get pressure on him, but yeah.
So where I'm confused is if they're running the same basic defense over and over again.
Yes.
Why are the players on the defense so confused?
Well, I'm guessing that it's even more complicated than that, right? I mean, like,
I'm sure it is.
I'm sure, like, and I think it's one step, right? It's not like, let's say it's Bobby, and I'm just going to use him as an example. It's not like Bobby ran to the wrong hash mark, and so somebody's open by 20 yards. It's not like he was supposed to run to the left hash mark and he ran to the right one. It's like one false step. That's all it takes in the NFL. Right. And so if Jordan Brooks is waiting half a beat too long to commit in one direction or another, that's enough to have a guy open. That's enough for a 12-yard completion. And if you're consistently making the same false step, it doesn't have to be that you're totally confused and doing completely the wrong thing. It can just be that little minute detail, or you're tipping it off, or whatever the case may be. That's enough to change everything in the NFL.
Especially when you're going against the Cooper Cups or Kittles
of
the world.
They're going to take advantage of those small things, and so hopefully they've actually got that cleaned up. It is 7:15. Time for Need to Know.
need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, the first step in the 100-yard game for Rashad Penny that we all know is coming on Monday night is out of the way. Practice yesterday without even showing up on the injury report. How about that? Alex Collins did miss practice entirely after Pete thought he would be good to go. So Penny, he's obviously well-rested. He could be poised to get the bulk of the carries on Monday night. I like his chances and the way this offense is now running as well. Offensive line's in better shape than it's been. The team is committed to running the ball. And I think they've also been spending much more time allowing the running backs to run downhill rather than forcing them to accelerate quickly out of that read option shotgun set. All those things should benefit Penny, who has the best breakaway speed of any of the backs on the roster. Now, how much will they be able to run, especially if New Orleans is prepared for that? We don't know. Will the commitment to the run open up the play action game? We'll find out. Can Geno play within himself and structure of this offense? Again, we'll find out on Monday night, but this offense is going to be under scrutiny in its second week now without Russell Wilson. We'll see what develops with Damian Lewis. He missed practice yesterday. The big guard is obviously important to what they're trying to do. The best news, however, is that Daryl Taylor was only limited just a few days after he was immobilized and taken to the hospital. He could even play in the game on Monday night.
He really feels like he's playing. He doesn't have any doubt that he can play. So we'll hold out hope that that's the case.
Cleveland didn't need Baker Mayfield last night. They beat the Broncos anyway. Case Keenum didn't turn it over, and someone named D'Ernest Johnson ran for 146 yards, so there's that. If D'Ernest can do it, 100 yards for Penny shouldn't be a problem.
Here's the second thing that easy. You need to know.
That easy. That's all it takes. 100 yards. Put it on the board. October 27, 2016 was the first time I heard, anyway, that Tim Leiwicki and the Oakview Group would be attempting to work with the city of Seattle to redevelop Key Arena and Seattle Center. Well, almost 5 years to the day later, the Kraken will play their first home game in the building that was first mentioned that day. Here's Tim Leiwicki from a few months after that in 2016.
Thanks, Seattle. Seattle, unbelievably kind. We understand the message that was delivered and the support that was delivered. We will not let Seattle down,
and
we promise.
They have not. He has lived up to that promise. The building is beautiful. Can't wait to be in there on Saturday night. We've been through so much to get here, but I'm pumped, man. I'm excited to go to the game tomorrow. I'll deal with the traffic. I'll deal with the parking. I'll handle the concession costs. I'll handle the lines. It's all fine. Because that's what it means to be a sports fan. There's got to be a little bit of sacrifice in there, and there's nothing that brings us together quite like sports. Right and left, genders, races, you name it. There'll be 16,000 people all cheering for the same team and wearing the same colors on Saturday night, or that same 16,000 that was singing along with There Goes My Hero on Tuesday, or whatever Coldplay will sing tonight. That is what it's all about. I'm so happy this arena was built. Whether or not you go to a game, you now have a team to root for because of this building and because of Tim Leiwicki, and I think we're likely to have an NBA team back sooner rather than later. As for the game tomorrow, Kraken trying to get their second win, taking on a Vancouver team that's 1-2-1 on the year. Let's also look at the NBA action last night. 46 for Steph Curry. He was great. Golden State beats the Clippers, and the champs go down to Miami. Heat beat the Bucks by 42.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
When Jared DePoto was asked about a Mitch Haniger extension in June, he reminded everyone that a marriage takes two parties. Well, when I asked him about it yesterday, I think he was a whole lot more encouraging.
I've always had the belief that this is where Mitch wants to be, and if that works out and we're able to come together on it somewhere down the road, then that'll be a wonderful outcome for both of us.
Certainly would be. Haniger had a great year bouncing back from two lost seasons and setting career highs this year with 39 home runs, 100 runs driven in. He's got one more season of team control before he hits free agency at age 32, so he's back next year no matter what. And I'm not necessarily wild about a huge contract for a player of that age, and certainly with his injury history, but I also think there's something to be said for leadership, consistency, and having that veteran presence that would balance out some of the youth movement we're all counting on. More than any of that, though, it's a sign, it's a signal to the players both on the team now and the potential additions in the offseason that the Mariners are serious about their future, that they're ready to go all in, as Haniger asked of them in that column. As for those potential free agents, I asked Jerry DePoto about the five big shortstops. He said they are committed to J.P. Crawford at the position, but that fitting into the clubhouse and positional flexibility would be key factors in determining who they attempt to court this offseason. Postseason action last night. Don't look at the box score, whatever you do for the NLCS. You don't want to know that Chris Taylor was 4-for-5 with three more home runs. He is a postseason hero. Dodgers win 11-2. They'll head back to Atlanta for game 6 tomorrow with the Braves still up 3-2 in the series. Red Sox and Astros go tonight at 5 o'clock. Nathan Eovaldi and Luis Garcia. Game 6, Astros looking to close things out at home. That's what you need to know. We do that every hour, quarter past the hour.
Question for you, and hopefully it's simple and you don't have to go into a whole lot of detail on this.
Yes.
What elevates a quarterback to a great quarterback? Because I have a quote from one Sean McVay that is a simple one-liner, but I want to know what your thoughts are.
What elevates any quarterback to being a great quarterback?
Yes.
To me, it's what they do in the final few drives of the game. Winning.
Okay. That's, I mean, it's summation sort of what he was getting to. His is more a little bit more philosophical and simpler.
Okay.
But, Maura, do you have an answer for that?
No.
What elevates a quarterback to be a great quarterback, in your opinion?
I mean, I think making the players around you better and keeping calm under pressure. A lot of guys.
Sean McVay says, when it's not right, they can make it right.
Mm.
And that's what I really, really hope after enough snaps of one, well, now one in a partial game from Geno.
Geno's not going to do that.
Not make it right, but well, make better decisions on the on things like the ball security, because you saw both of those games ended with...
Oh, I see. You're reading it as when he's doing something wrong, he knows how to fix it.
Yes.
I hear that much more as when the play is wrong or other things go wrong on the field, they can make up
That's
for
how
it.
I hear it, too. Like the stuff that Russ does when plays break down and he hits Tyler Lockett
right.
for some
sure.
amazing...
That's probably, stuff you don't that's want probably Geno Smith what to he do. Meant, but I'm breaking this down to a backup quarterback.
Yeah,
what
no,
makes
I
a
get
backup
it.
Quarterback good? Maybe not great.
Fixing his own mistakes. Yeah, I think I hadn't... He might have meant it that way. There's certainly two different ways you could read that. I mean, because it's not like, I don't know. That's a really interesting one. I hear him much more saying a guy like Russell Wilson or Kyler Murray or somebody who can see what's going on in the field is like, yeah, that didn't work. Or even the story Matt's now told us about how they totally misblocked the Beastquake. Right? Like, that's not a quarterback, it's a running back, but everything broke down on that play. It wasn't supposed to go like that, and Marshawn just had an unbelievable individual effort to make it all right.
And what was his quote? Is if we're all doing something wrong, we're right?
Right, at least we're doing it together,
yeah.
Right? Like, at least we're all doing it at the same time together. So, yeah, it's interesting. I hadn't necessarily thought about it that way, but, you know, I don't think Geno's a great quarterback. I think he's just trying to be a good quarterback. And maybe to be a good one, you've got to do what you're talking about. Fix some of the things that are wrong. Don't turn the ball over. Have better ball security. Just distribute and let playmakers do their thing. Let DK Metcalf do his thing. Let Tyler Lockett do his thing, right? Let Rashad Penny do his thing. Get that guy the ball. Let him get into space. And I know I'm not joking when it comes to Penny. He does have legitimate breakaway speed. We've seen it every time he's been healthy. Unfortunately, he just hasn't been healthy enough. But give that guy the ball. Let him go do his thing. He's talented. Alex Collins, if he's able to go, showed some of that, I thought, on Sunday night. Give the ball to the playmakers and let them go do their thing. And if Geno can do that without making too many mistakes, I think you're going to be in okay shape. Let's go back 5 years. Let's go back. Just travel in a little time capsule. Get your harp out, Justin. We're going to go back 5 years because it sure leads to a heck of a night tomorrow night. It's Mike Salk Show. We'll do it next, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Mike Salk Show,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Climate Pledge Arena opens for business, at least sports business, tomorrow night. We're going to be there. Justin Moore and I are all going together. Little date night for the
so
three
excited.
Of us.
And Heather.
And Heather, my wife, will be there as well.
I have to go to the team store today.
Yeah, you don't have anything? You
not
have
yet,
no gear.
But I will.
So what's the what will you go with? So I have my I have a quarter zip sweatshirt.
Do you want to make sure we're not wearing the same thing?
Well, I'm just curious. I have a blue quarter zip. Heather's got a shirt and a hat.
I have the Marine. Are you familiar with Marine Layer, the clothing store?
No, but yes. Okay.
It's fantastic. Anyway. I love Marine Layer. They made some Kraken shirts, so I got a Marine Layer Kraken shirt.
Okay, so you go in t-shirt.
Yep,
action.
T-shirt. Yeah.
Okay. Maura, what do you think you're, what is the, what are you hoping for?
I don't
for?
Know what the options are yet.
Well,
but
I was t-shirt,
thinking like
sweatshirt,
a,
hats?
Yeah, I was thinking like a sweatshirt or zip up or something.
A
probably.
Full-on
I'm always
jersey?
Cold, and it's cold in hockey rinks.
They've got some good sweatshirts, too. I would say that was one of the things that they had that were best.
Yeah.
You don't want to go like full hockey gear. Like maybe try to bring a stick.
what? Were you guys expecting?
I'm expecting you to dress up like a goalie.
I would lose my mind if you showed
up. Blocker, glove.
Paint my face, wear a wig, you know.
This was years ago now. It's probably 15 years ago. When Mika Kiprusoff was the goalie, I want to say in Vancouver, there was this little kid. He had to be, I don't know, 6, 7 years old, maybe a little older, but somewhere in that range, who would fully dress as Mika Kiprusoff, like pads, glove, blocker, helmet, everything, right? And during warm-ups, he would sit and or stand right behind Kiprusoff and imitate every single action that Kiprusoff made. He was like little Kiprusoff. It was so funny, man. Just the most adorable thing. So if that could be you, right?
Okay.
I'm excited to see what super fans we develop.
You could be the Philip Grubauer right behind them, imitating everything.
Lil Grubes.
Yeah, I don't think that would be as cute.
What's up,
Lil
Grubes? That could be you.
Might seem like I was a creepy stalker or something.
Yeah. Hey, what's that woman behind Grubauer? Why is she imitating all of the things he does? That's kind of weird. All right. Well, good. Go to the team store, get something, because it's going to be a blast, man. I'm just so happy. I am so excited that this whole thing has finally come around and that you know, 5 years after hearing, and it really has been exactly 5 years. It's so crazy. I remember it vividly. I remember coming in that morning reading in the paper that all of a sudden Ed Murray, who was the mayor at the time, was going to start putting this out as Key Arena as a possibility. And at the time, everyone was all in on Soto because it was the only possibility, right? Chris Hansen had done his thing. He had really made this dream a reality for the first time since forever in 2012. And he got it almost there. He really did. I mean, credit to Chris Hansen. He almost got the ball over the goal line. But unfortunately, it didn't work. Unfortunately, at the last moment, the NBA said no. The Kings said no, and then after all of that happened, he went back and tried to, like, you know, he double-crossed the commissioner of the NBA with what he did down in Sacramento, and that was it.
Was there some pushback from other parties as well?
There was at the time, but they were over all that. If they had gotten the Kings, this thing was getting built.
Okay.
Honestly, if they had gotten the Kings, this thing was getting built. He didn't have the muscle to get it done, unfortunately, and then he lost it. Then he went, you know, he went rogue, and you can't do that. Chris Hansen deserves a ton of credit for starting this process and nearly getting it over the goal line, but he doesn't play in this arena, so to speak. This isn't what he does for a living. And so when Tim Leiwicki's name showed up 4 years later in 2016, I was like, oh, well, there you go.
Do you think Tim Leiwicki's name showed up because of some of the momentum that had been built by Chris, or was that already happening behind the scenes?
I don't think it was happening. I mean, it was 4 years later that Leiwicki kind of got into this, but I don't know. That's a good question. I do think the momentum helped. It reminded some of the politicians and everybody that there was, like, a legitimate possibility here. But Leiwicki had a couple of things going for him. One, he was willing to try to figure out how to make Key Arena work. And that helped the city rather than worked against what the city wanted. We can all argue that the city had ridiculous ideas about what they thought was best for Soto, but those are the ideas the city had, even if they were wrong. Okay. And so from the beginning, Hansen was trying to fight an uphill battle against a city that didn't really want to do what he wanted to do. They had different plans for that area. Leiwicki had the advantage of coming in and saying, all right, I'll work with what you want to do. What do you? Oh, you want me to take this off your hands? This is a money-losing problem for you right now, Key Arena, Seattle Center. Let me see if I can work with it. And so the fact that he had done that, the fact that his experience was building arenas, and specifically Staples Center and everything at LA Live down in LA, Chris Hansen had zero experience. Tim Leiwicki knows how to lobby. He knows how to bring in the community. He knows how to do all this stuff, and all of those were the things I said that day. Like, yeah, this is a guy who was I think in my words were cast out of clay for this job exactly. And you fast forward 5 years later.
Oh, should we go back in time? Should we go back in time first?
I guess if we do, I guess we can. Here, let's go back in time.
Okay.
I don't think I have my cuts, though. I have, here's some of Leiwicki.
When you hear the facts and you understand we're going to privately finance it, when you hear the facts and understand we have owners that are connected and committed to bringing a hockey team here, and that we have the relationships to do that, and they have the money to do that, and when you hear the facts that we are going to continue to work through how we get people in and out of that neighborhood so that we deal with the transportation issues, don't let 9 years worth of negative, 9 years worth of black cloud, 9 years worth of agendas ultimately make your decision for you.
I think he's right about that. It was odd the way things went down, because once he showed up as, and I believe, a white knight to fix this thing, people had become so invested in Chris Hansen and so, like, numb to the idea of Key Arena that they weren't willing, some people anyway, weren't willing to open their mind to changing the possibility. So when I got excited about Leiwicki, I was killed for it. Everyone had lined up behind Hansen. They thought it was the only way to do it. The city had bungled Key Arena so many times. But, you know, here's some of the responses I got when I said, like, this is a good thing. The key's a dead end, Mike. No renovation will be adequate. There's no parking, impossible traffic. Key Arena renovation is subpar. It'll be viewed as inadequate quicker than the Kingdom was. Have they spoken to either the NBA or NHL to see if renovation of Key is even a possibility? The NBA and NHL have always said the renovation of Key is a no-go. All we've ever heard is Key isn't good enough and a renovation won't do it. How much is Leiwicki paying you to continue to push false info about Soto Arena Hanson and promote the Key? Ridiculous. What if no teams come? See Leiwicki's KC Sprint Center. Provide funding. Private funding eliminates risk to the city. Hey, Mike, I love watching the NBA and NHL teams in Kansas City. Leiwicki sure delivered there. Seattle should have a ton of confidence. People were furious at this. And here we go, 5 years later. This was the only path to success. Chris Hansen, league didn't want him. Sorry. He got out ahead of the NBA. They didn't want him. They liked the Leiwickis. They brought in Bonderman. They brought in Bruckheimer. They'll bring in other partners when the NBA is ready to expand. This is the team to get it done. And they did. They delivered on it. It took 5 years. It took 1 year longer than I thought it would. I think we thought that we would have a team playing here in 2020. As it turns out, it was 1 year later. But tomorrow night, we're watching our team at home. I think that is so unbelievably cool.
I used to kind of hate the idea of the renovation of the Key Arena because of I wanted the stadium district. I wanted three in a row. How cool would that be? One train to get to all of them.
I agree with you. That might have been a preferable situation. I agree with you.
Sure, but my now when I...
But what's better? Don't let the good be the enemy, or don't let the great be the enemy of the good. That would have been perfect.
I hear you. And now that I thought when I renovated the Key Arena, I was like, oh, they're going to put some weird new building there. And part of me was okay with it, and then the... I didn't understand why they wanted to keep the roof. And now I look back at all my other arguments of, oh, they're taking all the charm and soul out of all the old Seattle buildings. It's like, well, they kind of didn't. They kept the one thing you right. see from the street level still looks the same.
And don't you think they can now start really renovating the rest of that area? Like, hopefully this turns over and really makes that Lower Queen Anne area pop. You've got the waterfront area, which can pop. The Soto area is still a legitimate possibility to keep improving, and what the Mariners are doing, investing in that Pyramid Brewing site and some other spots. So honestly, I think this can help transform Seattle. Would I have preferred it in Soto? Yes, I would have. I would have preferred if Chris Hansen had been successful. But once he wasn't successful, the idea of continuing to blindly follow him into a dead-end alley, which was never going to get a street vacation, doesn't make a lot of sense. So I'm willing to deal with some of the issues. Key Arena, this project's not perfect. I said this in 2017. Leave that to the politicians. Leave that to the traffic experts. Why get involved? Get a team. Get a hockey team. Get a basketball team. Get an arena. Get a concert venue. And get the things that bring our community together, which should be what we want as sports fans. Don't allow us to be divided. It's silly. And when I see these complaints of, oh, easy for you to say, go to games and this and that and far away. Look, I don't know what to tell you. Most people don't go to 40 games a year. Most people go to at most a handful. And if you can't handle sitting in an extra 10 minutes of traffic a couple times a year, then you're not that big a sports fan.
I
was a little angry that day in 2017.
It ended a little
heated. Well, and I understand there were people in the media saying I was being paid by the Leiwickis and this, that, and the other. By the way, when all was said and done, the Kraken aren't even on our station. So it's not like we had like some deal in place or anything like that. It was just a matter of common sense. Just look at the projects. Look at the guy who understands how to lobby. Look at the guy who understands government. Look at the guy who has a track record. Look at the guy who brings in the real money. And guess what we have now? An unbelievable brand new arena that I just cannot wait to go to tomorrow night. Looking forward to it. Brock Heward's next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Brock and Salk.
Brock Heward is my hero.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30.
Brought to you by Precor Home Fitness.
On the Mike Salk Show.
What Brock Heward says? No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Good morning, buddy. How we doing? How's Ames?
Good morning, Michael. I'm doing good. I'm on top of the bed. I'm not in bed. I'm good. On top of bed. On these Fridays, it's going to be kind of fun.
Yeah.
During football season. I'm in Des Moines, Iowa, on my way to Ames. Going to get actually a little workout in down in the hotel gym here before I got to head out.
Yeah.
But, Humble brag. All is good in the hood.
Make sure you slide that in there. Make sure everybody knows. Yeah, no, it's fine. Humble brag it that you're going to be doing a little working out.
Oh, the humble brag?
Not a humble brag.
Okay, humble brag. Well, not even a humble brag. It was 5 years ago, the story you wrote, bro.
How about that? That's just full on. I'm just full on bragging today. Yeah, I was right. How about that? I was right. And I know there's people mad and think that I'm gloating and taking a victory tour. Suck it up. I am. taking my victory tour today because I'm going to the arena tomorrow. And I dealt with more garbage, not just from listeners, but from other members of the media in this town telling me that I was on people's payroll and that I was crazy and that I was against sports fans and all of that. And here we go. We're going to go watch the Kraken tomorrow night. I can't wait.
Pretty cool. Cool play tonight, too. And I think what you felt that day and what you understood in that moment where others didn't is, A, you had a little background in Southern California living there and knowing kind of that Lewicki name. Certainly folks here knew his brother's name, who in Todd, who's now a part of it. And you just kind of started to connect the puzzle pieces and put it together and say, here's some guys that that have relationship with the leagues, number one. Here's some guys that have done it before all over the globe, number two, and have experience doing so. And, yeah, and number three, I'm sorry, man, you can't have animosity when you try to work with a city, and as difficult as it can be and as difficult as they can be. And the animosity, unfortunately, that Hansen's crew had, I mean, that was at the center of what they were trying to get done. And it just doesn't, in the real estate development world, having lived in that world a little bit, you know, that's just not how it works. So put all those things together, and yes, 5 years later, by all accounts, watch some of the pictures and videos that people have posted. The place looks incredible. Yeah. And tomorrow night, man, I wish I could transport myself from Ames, Iowa, when that game ends, right to Seattle, Washington, and the Kraken begin, because that's going to be quite a scene tomorrow night.
Are you ready for Monday night when Rashad Penny rushes for 100-plus yards?
Sure, yes. Are you seeing that in your future?
Huh?
Why don't you write about that right now?
I've already said
it. You don't have to wait 5 years.
Right.
Saturday, Sunday, Monday. We can see in 3 days whether your prophetic ways are still as strong as they were 5 years ago.
Are you buying this one? Yes? No? Rashad, 100 yards? Some guy named DeErnest ran for 140 last night. You don't think Rashad Penny can run for 100 yards? He's a first-round pick.
That dude ran hard last night, huh? And what a testament. I mean, that is a testament to, hey, this is our style of ball. This is who we are. And it doesn't really matter if we're down tackles, if it doesn't matter if we're down two or three running backs. You know, everybody has such conviction and buy-in with Kevin Stefanski there, and this is how we're going to go about it. And they didn't score, frankly, a ton of points, but they scored enough. And more importantly, with the game on the line, they didn't give the ball back. And they ended up finishing, which is what the run game is supposed to be and supposed to do. And whether it is Penny or if it's Alex Collins, and I think there were some favorable reports this week, right, that he may be actually able to play Monday, like Daryl Taylor.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know if we feel quite as good about that.
Oh, not really?
Well, Pete said he was going to practice, and then he didn't. Okay. So it was one of those moves. So we'll see what happens.
Oh, that's not good. Yeah, that's not good. So it's going to be a lot of Penny and Homer world. Do I think he's going to run for 100? No. Do I think he could run for 50 to 70 and DJ Dallas and Travis Homer and the rest of the crew come together and hopefully get the first round pick back off of his concussion, which has just continued to linger and linger and linger? And can he add in 10, 15, 30 yards on jet sweeps and all of a sudden you run for 140 or 50 combined? Yeah, that is absolutely has to be the recipe. They showed you last night. The Browns showed you with a backup quarterback the recipe for winning. The Seahawks showed it in the second half in Pittsburgh. Mike, and that is going to have to be once again on display Monday night.
Hey, did you hear any of Jerry DePoto yesterday? In addition to some really positive thoughts on Mitch Haniger, I was asking about the five big shortstops that are out there, and this was his comments.
You know, for us, one of the key elements is we have a shortstop that we love, and you know, JP's our shortstop, and we feel like he is, you know, an anchor on our infield and an emotional leader for our team. So one of the things that's important to us is finding a player who is adaptable and willing to move around the field and maybe get a little uncomfortable. And there's some of those guys that already have done that in their career. Guys like Semien and Baez have done that.
So Semien, Baez, we'll take Corey Seager off the list for now for obvious reasons. Semien, Baez, Correa, and Trevor Story. What do you think? What do you want to do?
Well, I think Semien would be the most natural. He knows the division. He's played in Oakland. He was your kind of nemesis for a bunch of those years. He's played third. He's played second. So I think he would be the most natural. You know, I think you're going to have to do a deep dive into personality You know, I think as much of those guys, all those guys are uber talented. You know, they've all produced.
Mm-hmm.
Story, you'd be a little bit more nervous about. You got a great arm. I think he could play third as well defensively. But, you know, can he hit consistently enough? Got great pop. Watched him a little bit, obviously, and you know, but is he a product a little bit of some thin air and hitting in Colorado, and how exactly does that treat? He's probably the floor, and Simeon would be the ceiling, and then Baez a little bit of a wild card in between, kind of how I look at that.
Yeah, so I'm assuming you just,
by the way,
you don't believe in Correa as a possibility.
Yeah, go ahead.
Then. You don't believe Correa as a possibility, because he's probably the best player there at the age and everything else.
He's the best of those, but... Correct. He's the best of those, but he's probably going to command at his age the biggest money of that. He's probably also going to be the one that says, nope, I'm the shortstop, and I'm not going to do that. And that just doesn't
tend to agree.
I don't know, that one I just have no, yeah.
Baez is the one that is so intriguing. Yeah, go ahead.
Baez, for sure. I do want to let you know, I've kind of been cheating on you a little bit.
Again? So,
I mean, you cheat on me on Wednesdays with Matt, but I kind of, with the Mariner stuff, kind of cheat on you with Goldie.
Oh, yeah.
Getting a chance to work with Aaron Goldsmith this month, and, you know, like, I appreciate your baseball takes, but, you know, and I love them. And, you know, after my little fling is over with Aaron, he and I work this month together, and then I'll get Joe Davis back for November, and Aaron's going to leave me. But for these 5 weeks, it's been... Not gonna lie, it's been pretty tantalizing.
I bet
working with Aaron on the Mariners' perspective behind the scenes.
Yeah, so, well, finally you get some legitimate Mariners information.
I'll ask him.
All right,
I'll ask him and text you what he thinks. Right. I'm gonna guess he too is intrigued. I think by Baez, just like you are, just the talent, right? Just the flair, and would he be a second baseman or third baseman?
He played a lot of second in his career. I mean, he started off playing second base for the Cubs because they had Addison Russell, and then he played a little second base this year because of Rafael Furcal. So he's really just been a middle infielder. Man, he's put up some great years. I mean, you look at 2018, he was a 6.5 WAR player in 18 and 19. So even this year, he didn't have a great year. He was still if he had been on the Mariners, he would have led them with a 4.5 WAR. I mean, you look at some of the numbers these guys put up. It's nuts.
Yep. Kind of got some edge to him, too, doesn't he?
He's got a little, he'll pimp the home runs,
Yep. You could see him and JP either just being perfect, like a marriage made in heaven, like, yeah.
Or?
Now you got some serious edge up the middle, or there could be a little risk emotionally with that one, too.
Yeah.
So all great conversations,
fun.
Man.
Good stuff. Enjoy Ames, Iowa State and Oklahoma State, and we'll talk on Monday.
Okay, Michael. See you, buddy.
All right, there you go. There's Brock Heward every day at 7:45, and... Yeah, maybe I'm being obnoxious. Maybe I am. Maybe I'm taking my victory lap. But I took a lot of guff, man. I really did.
I was just going to ask you if your back hurts.
It hurts, yeah.
From patting yourself so hard.
I like this text. This one's got me nailed perfectly. That promo was hilarious. So upbeat and jaunty. I can just see the 7-10 bosses saying, how do we cover this negative ranting lunatic with flowers and smiles so people will tune in? Like, yeah, I think that's actually exactly how the conversation went. That's why we have G. Scott in, to lighten things up. We'll do it next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.